Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Hola.
Hello, this call is being translated.
Abuela, listen to what my phone can do.
Abuela, escucha lo que mi teléfono puede hacer.
Wow, ahora dime sobre tu novia nueva.
Wow, now tell me about this new girlfriend.
Huh?
Tú sabes lo que dije.
You know what I said.
Language is no longer a barrier, thanks to Live Translate with Galaxy AI on Samsung Galaxy S24 Ultra. Learn more at Samsung.com. Samsung account login required. Calls must be made using the native Samsung dialer.
Welcome to the fire.
Welcome to the fire, boys. My name is Parker McDonald.
And I'm Walter Lee, and we'll be your hosts on this episode of the Southern Collective Hunting Podcast. If you're a new hunter trying to learn the basics,
or you're a veteran woodsman just trying to get through your workday, there's always a place at our campfire for you.
Speaking of the fire, we would love it if you guys would join our growing Patreon community and be a part of the best and only digital deer camp south of the Mason-Dixon line.
Come on. If you'd like to learn more, click on the link in the show notes. But for now, Walt,
welcome to the fire. All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Southern Collective. My name is Walt, and I'm joined by the two finest hunters from the state of Alabama, Matthew Reeves and Brett Mashburn. This is our formal recording because we rehearsed this entire podcast 72 hours ago, and then the recording software crashed. And this is the benefit to doing things in advance. We talked about all the different things that are coming down the pipe. We now have the breathing room to record an entire episode, a banger of an episode, and then turn around and record it again and get it out to you guys by Tuesday. Unfortunately, P. Dizzle McDonald will not make it to this episode. He is too busy chasing velvet whitetails right now to join us. But gentlemen, the season has kicked off for two-thirds of this podcast tonight. Matt's kicked off really, really well. So before we get to the Matthew Reeves show, Brett, what are you doing in your world to get ready? I know you got a baby on the way, but you got to be doing something. I know you too well to know you're just sitting around twiddling your thumbs.
Honestly, at the moment, I've been doing a lot of last-minute stuff, getting ready for this baby, but I pretty much have what I want done already done. I have my scouting's all done. My cameras are set up where I want them set up for when that shift happens, when people start hunting, so I'm ready to go in that aspect. I just not exactly sure when I'm going to get out, but I'm ready. That's for sure.
I hear you, man. I'm ready too. I'm ready to get back out there. I did a fair amount of scouting. The cool thing about having done this again is I've now actually hunted. And so, I did a lot of in-season scouting, went and found my first shed in a long time. I'm walking through the woods and I look down, I'm like, It's a weird looking stick. And I take two more steps and I went, there's no way that is not what that is. And I take two steps and look back and I see that tine sticking up. I'm like, no. And I walk over there. It's about 80 or 60 inches one side. And then if you take the deductions, which I don't believe in deductions, it's about a 22 inch antler.
On the squirrel deductions.
Well, squirrel deductions. That's right.
Yeah. That's what, I love finding sheds, man. If that's one thing that I enjoy most about scouting is being able to find a shed. And it's hard to find them down here where we're from.
Yeah. Unless you're Brett.
Is it?
We don't you have 170 hours.
You have to be out there to find them. Just saying.
We need a shirt that says gross measurements are for hunters, like nets are for squirrels. And it's got like an antler that's just chewed off by squirrels or something like that. I mean, that'd be too funny. But boys, before we get into this, we had something happen very recently that I feel like warrants a discussion. We talk all the time about the value of Patreon and what you get in that arena. You heard it in the intro. We have a digital deer camp. We invest so hard into that group. There is so much to be had over there. And we're the three of us on this podcast, we're not even talking about what we contribute. I mean, the group members invest in people in a way that is just unreal. Before we recorded the show, Todd shot his first deer and
with a bow
from the ground. And the group rallied around him. We had seasoned deer hunters. We had seasoned blood trackers. We had seasoned, just all walks of life, just throwing immense amounts of information at him in real time so that he could go out there and potentially recover that animal. And so far he hasn't. But you got to see an evolution of a hunter as he just gets all this information. He summed up the evening by saying, I can't wait to go back and watch all these again because I got a notepad and I'm taking notes. Right. I mean, that community is crazy valuable. So if you enjoyed Matt's most recent video, if you enjoyed a lot of the videos we've been putting out, one of the ways that we help pay for that is through Patreon. But we try really hard to make Patreon a value driven arena. That was on full display today. And I just felt compelled to give Todd a shout out. Keep your spirits high. You'll be listening to this the day after that happened. Don't stop hunting, Matt. I mean, you basically told him he's got the best testing arena.
Yeah. Best spot to learn. I mean, if you're a first time bow hunter, the hardest part is getting in front of a deer. And he's got the deer figured out and they're there. So learn from it. Take advantage of it. Don't shy away from it because it's there, you know, own it, kill one. And when he sent that polo this morning, I was pumped, you know, and everybody in the polo was pumped. But like you said, just to see how everybody kind of, you know, if he had a question, he was getting an answer in no time. And I think at one point he had to go back to working or something. We were all like begging for an update because we were so excited for him that we wanted to, you know, we wanted to see his success. So that's a great thing about that community.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really happy about it. I was really proud the whole time I'm at work, you know, between calls, I'm like checking up on 3X speed, just trying to stay fresh as all of them pour in. And I was just so happy to see so many different people with so many different experiences invest in Todd. And it's not a matter of if he kills a deer and recovers it. It's only a matter of time. Like you said, he's got the opportunity. So, speaking of opportunities, Matt, you had the opportunity of a lifetime. That's what we're here to talk about. We're talking about the kind of deer that when you walk into the taxidermist bill, you don't even hear the price when he tells you what it is. You just hand him your credit card and say, swipe it twice if you have to. Yep. Start us off at the beginning, because actually you might have already heard the beginning. If you've been listening to the podcast, we dropped a live from the fire episode that summarized your preseason scouting for anybody who hasn't got to there yet. Kind of give them the rundown on how this kicked off, man.
Yeah, so last year was my first year hunting Kentucky, and it pretty much whooped me. For the most, I say whooped me. I had a lot of really close encounters. Like I was around the deer, I was just missing, you know, that 20 more yards to be in range of them. So I set out this summer with my buddy Andrew. We made a trip up there, so we were going to go scout, see what we could find, put out cameras. I think we ended up putting around 13 between me and two other guys, and got up there, put our cameras out, confirmed a lot of stuff we were wondering about, And I had one area that I always kind of intrigued me. And on the last afternoon, we drove through there and we ended up seeing three bucks. Well, I was plumb out of cameras, so I didn't put a camera up that way. I just kind of put it in the back of my brain, like, hey, if none of this other stuff works out, you know, this is kind of where I'll lean. So fast forward, I think that was in July, we head up for the opener. Our expectations weren't as high as last year because, I mean, if you watch any TV show, it's like set up on a bean field, big buck's going to come out, you're going to shoot it. That's kind of what we thought in the first year. And you know, I think a lot of people think that. But we go up there, and I said, well, I'm going to scout. And to kind of backlog a little bit, all of our cameras started off hot, and then they all went dead except for one of mine. I was having bucks pretty regular in there. We actually got a opportunity at a buck the second evening, but that kind of – it was a hard situation and whatnot. But we get there. I get dropped off. I start scouting. I walk up in the area. There's an old grown-up field. I have two bucks in front of me at 40 yards. See that. And my buddy ended up actually shooting one of those the second evening. So he killed his first velvet buck. He's also a Patreon as well. His name's Matthew Holland. If you listen to this, Holland, we appreciate you, man. But anyways, I'm scouting that. Well, I decided to go watch a field right at last light. And I mean, when I say last light, you can barely see with your binoculars. And ended up three deer were out there. One had a really big body, but his head was down in the field and I couldn't really tell what he was. Well, he finally picked his head up and I could tell he was a really good deer. Like, I mean, 200 plus pound body, like he had to have some good headgear on there. Well, there were two other deer that were with him that kind of stayed on the field edge. He was a little bit out. So I put that in my head, scratched all the plans that I had as far as, you know, the camera that was doing good. I said, hey, I gotta get in this spot before all the pressure gets to it. Just got to get in there and see what can happen. So I went back to camp, looked at my map all night, and I really rely on imagery and all that stuff to kind of pinpoint where I'm going to hunt. So couldn't hunt it for an afternoon because the wind was bad. So I was like, well, man, I just get in there in the morning and try to catch one of these bucks coming back to bed. So wake up that morning, got up really early, got to the gate at like, I don't know, 4:15, something like that, started walking in. And granted, I'm walking in blind to a spot. So it's not ideal to be walking in blind, opening morning to a spot you've never been to. So as y'all could probably guess, if y'all's opening morning is anything like mine, it's usually a catastrophe. Nothing goes right. Your headlamp dies. I think, well, you had your headlamp die on your first hunt.
I did.
Okay.
Yeah.
That happened to me as well. I forgot to tell y'all that. I get in there and I walk past the spot I end up hunting, trying to find better sign, walking down deer trail, and my light just goes dead. You know, my main light. Well, luckily my green light worked and I was able to work my way back to this area that I found. And what the area was, it's kind of like a finger in between two thickets. And there was a gradual point that ran off that finger into a hardwood bottom. And so I figured that there would be a buck that would bed, you know, kind of on that transition line right there in that gradual finger. There was another finger, but it was very steep terrain. Like it was very like sudden. So I stayed out of there, got up at like 5:30. I think in the video I say I was set at like 5:37, something like that. And so I'm sitting there in the dark and I hear something walking. I'm like, well, you know, here comes a deer already, but can't shoot it. It's dark. Well, the stinging thing walks right under my tree. And, you know, I don't know if y'all been in this situation, but like, you always want to know what's there in the dark and you always like want to, hey, I'm going to shine my light on my pack to see what's in my pack. And it, you know, wanders over there to where the deer is and you get to see what it is. Well, I told myself I wasn't going to do that just cause I thought the spot was that good. So when I walked in there, I noticed like, why did I hunt this area? One was because of the terrain feature, and two was because one of the trails that I found, and I found a lot of browse in the woods themselves. Because right now, acorns aren't really dropping. That's not the hot food source. So did that, ended up getting in the tree. A couple red oaks started falling, so like that brought my spirits up a little bit about the spot. But if you go back and listen to our bold prediction episode, Walt said that I would kill, what was it? You said I'd kill a buck 140, open in the morning.
140
opening.
Yep.
And so while my headlamp's dying, I'm going, man, this bowl prediction is ruined. You know, like I'm already, this is the first sit. I've screwed it up. I've mucked up the area. It's not going to happen. So anyways, back in the tree and sitting there, I think we were texting a little bit, not much. It was still early. And, I mean, I had all my stuff set up, put my camera on where I thought I wanted it. Ended up, I need to fix that. But I'm sitting there and I hear like a squirrel cutting up behind me. And so I just turn around in my saddle, to look that way. And I'm kind of looking. And I catch a tail flicker on the wood line. And I was like, hey, there's a deer. So I immediately turned around and turned all 74 cameras I have on and, said, hey, you know, buckle up, here we go. Cause I was shooting, if it wasn't a spike or a forky, it was getting shot. So I got prepared, grabbed my bow. Well, when I saw the first deer come off the hill, I noticed it had a really big body. And at the time I wasn't thinking, hey, this is that buck that was bedded or that was feeding last night. That did not click in my head. I just knew, hey, this is a big body deer. Be ready. Don't get caught off guard. So as soon as I grab my bow and turn around, the joker's on my side of the creek already, coming up the hill like quick. So I had a Insta360, my GoPro, and then my ZV1. My ZV1 got caught on me on the saddle because I didn't have my base put in the right spot. So main camera, ditched it. I said, I'm not ruining this opportunity, because at this point I've seen the deer and I've seen his rack. And he was outside the ears, like, I'm like, okay, this is a good buck. I'm going to shoot him. So he's facing straight towards me walking up. And as he's walking, I go to full draw and he stops like facing me. And I'm thinking, oh, my thermals are pulling down to that creek. He smelt me. This is about to be, you know, a Hail Mary. So the other two bucks that are behind him pushed him a little bit. You know how when deer can be walking, like they're just like slowly walking. Then one deer moves quick and it kind of bumps them. Well, that was the case for this buck. So he bumped and turned broadside, and I went, meh, and he didn't stop. And I had to do the meh again, and he stopped, and he was just quartering to me a little bit ways. Well, the joker's at 10 yards, so I'm at full draw. I put my pin on him, and I let one fly. And my arrow went in. I didn't get a pass through. My knock was sticking up, kind of wiggling as he ran. Well, I'm trying to keep my cool because, one, I just shot the biggest buck of my life. And two, I got to listen to this thing crash. Like, never just lose all, you know, sorts of thought when you're in that crucial moment. So I'm sitting there and I listen to him, and he hits the wood line, and then it makes a loud crash, then goes silent, and then makes another loud crash. So I go, okay, he dropped, he's dead right there. I was able to celebrate, whatever, acted a fool. I'm not going to apologize for that, because that was pure emotion, because that was awesome. I hope all of y'all can experience that. But anyways, I'm up in the tree, call my dad like I always do, talk to him. Then I started calling y'all, started telling you what happened, replaying the shot. I'm looking at the shot over the GoPro, like trying to make sure I made a good shot. Well, bow hunting, you second guess everything after your shot, especially when one's has the arrow sticking out of it. I don't like that. Because last year I shot two deer and that happened, and I hit the knuckle. One of them I got the liver. The other one I just shot in the leg. Like, it was no good. But took my time, told myself I was really going to soak in the moment. Like, I had Andrew there, I had Holland there. Like, we were going to enjoy the whole thing. So fast forward to get down, find some blood, and I look at the first few drops of blood, and in the video I think I go, oh, yeah, he's dead. Like I just knew, like. And I think, well, I sent all the footage, and like, I think you thought it was a shoulder shot. I thought it was a shoulder shot at one point.
Dude, I was praising you. I'm just like, dude, congratulations, doing your thing. And I immediately swipe up and I go to Parker's chat. I'm like, dude, I hate to say it, but there's way too much arrow hanging out of that deer. Like, you could just see it waving. And I'm like, is that 15 yards? The dude's like 6'9". He's got the draw length of freaking, you know, Zeus himself. You know, there's no way he didn't get a pass through. And I was really like, I think one of the reasons why I was so hyped when you called me and showed me you had the deer, my wife was like, you're really overreacting, was because for all of that time, I'm just going,
yeah,
like, this is going to be terrible if this happens to him 2 years in a row.
Yeah, it was rough. And to go back on like the polo stuff. So the guys I call, you know, like y'all, the team, my close friends, all those people, my wife, mom, everybody. But I was able to polo everybody, you know, and say, hey, I shot a big buck. And then they're on the edge of their seats for the rest of the morning because none of them were hunting at the time. And we ended up sending that. I got down, got Andrew, and I made all of them carry a camera for the recovery. So we had like three camera angles for the recovery. That was a big part of telling the story. And then we I went and got them. They went ahead and got the deer cart and came in. And we start the track. So we start the track. And if y'all see in the video, like he bound like 12 feet at a time. Like yeah. The Joker was moving. And so we get to the wood line and I see where he.
Hola.
Hello. This call is being translated.
Abuela, listen to what my phone can do.
Abuela, escucha lo que mi teléfono puede hacer.
Wow. Ahora dime sobre tu novia nueva.
Wow. Now tell me about this new girlfriend.
Huh?
Tú sabes lo que dije.
You know what I said.
Language is no longer a barrier, thanks to Live Translate with Galaxy AI on Samsung Galaxy S24 Ultra. Learn more at Samsung.com. Samsung account login required. Calls must be made using the native Samsung dialer.
Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. That's Atlassian.com. Atlassian.
This episode is brought to you by Funnables. Funnables aren't just fruit snacks. Every bite your child takes is fuel to spark their imagination, taking them from a wild unicorn space mission to a deep sea dive into a rainbow river. Funnables are made with 7.1% real fruit puree and are an excellent source of vitamins A, C, and E. So anytime, any place, make snack time playtime with Funnables fruit snacks. Have fun, eat it too. Visit FunnablesSnacks.com to shop now.
What is that?
I think he just got drawn for a hunt.
I sure did. I didn't.
You get a buddy pass?
Yep.
All right. Tell me when. What do I need to put on?
Going out for the highest donations.
Hey, I'll put my truck on the line. I'll hit a deer for you this time.
Brett was pumped with that. We were doing a little dance. It caught me off guard.
I couldn't figure out what he was doing because he was choppy there for a second. I'm like, does he just like crap himself or what? Like, what's he doing over there?
Sorry to derail everything, but I've been trying to. I got an email saying I want a special opportunity hunt for Alabama.
Uh-huh.
And I've been trying to check it all day and can't get in. Can't get in. The whole website's been crashed with people, I guess. And I finally got in and seen what I drew. And
well, good job, buddy. There's a live moment for you right here on the podcast, boys. Matt, Matt, where were you going with that? Because to be honest with you, I lost it when he started talking about quota permits.
Hey, that's all good. No, we were on the blood trail, and you know, every blood trail you kind of hold your breath. Even if you hear deer crash or don't see it go down, you just hear it. I've had deer crash and get up and run off, never find them again. But we hit like a little thicket wall, and it just confirmed that he was about to die. Like there was blood all over the trees where that from that entrance wound, like just really good sign. Well, then he got into like a grass field. Well, I hate tracking in a grass field because it's hard to see it on the grass, and there's so many like levels of grass, you know, like mm-hmm. It can hit one blade at the top or hit very at the bottom. You just don't know. But we're going to track, and I'm thinking in my head, like, I'm gonna have to get a dog. Like, I'm gonna have to get a dog to find this deer because it's not panning out. Well, I walk about five more yards and Holland goes, hey, look, I think there's some blood. You know, there's a good bit of blood on those leaves up there. Well, I walk. Well, I don't know what he had, you know, what sense he had, but he decided to put the camera up, like hold it up real high. Well, I walk like two more steps and I say, boys, this is going to be a hard track. And then I walk two more steps and I turn around and look at him. And I said, not until you find him. And he was laying right there. So we got really excited together, you know, just to have my buddies there. And I hadn't even walked up on the deer yet. I was just pumped that he was like, I knew he was there. He wasn't moving. He'd been dead for a while. And we walk up to the deer, and the deer grew from what I thought I had shot. He grew a drop time of all things. So to be a typical 8-point with a drop time and full velvet, like, it was just a kind of a whirlwind. Like, most deer that I kill, you know, you go to pick them up and you got to like hold their ears to make their rack look big, you know, but yeah. Like, I'm just holding tines, and it's like, this thing's, you know, a monster. And, you know, for a guy from the South, you know, to come out there and kill a deer like that, I mean, that was my biggest buck. A lot of people, you know, see those deer and, you know, that's just another day for them. But for me, I was stoked, because it meant so much from the hard work from last year to previous years, from the sacrifices of my wife and my family. Like, it was just a big deal for me in the moment. And I think in the video I told my dad, or I was on the phone with my dad, and I was like, I'm probably going to get emotional, you know, when I find this deer. And I didn't get emotional when I found the deer. I got emotional when I was walking out of the woods, you know, thinking about what had just happened. Like, man, this is years and years of preparation to come to this point. And for it to happen on an opening day in Kentucky within the first hour, you know, it was kind of like, man, that hunt just like was put in your hands. But we say it over and over again, like, you do have those hunts, but you've earned them at some point along the way. Like, mm-hmm. I've learned that, hey, I need to be in this spot at this time to catch him coming back to bed because the moon's doing this, or the weather's doing this, or the pressure's doing this. You know, I learned all those things through the years from the mishaps. Usually when I hunt, that deer's at 70 yards walking away from me and I don't get a shot. But I've been able to critique what I've done to get where I believe the deer is going to go. And it worked out that morning. So we ended up, you know, taking a bunch of pictures, just enjoying it, soaking it up. I think we ended up getting out of there at like, we got back at the place at like 11 o'clock. You know, I shot the deer at 6:40. So really took our time with it and soaked it up, FaceTimed both of y'all and Parker when I was at the deer. Ended up my shot. So we were talking about shoulder shot. The deer was quartering to me just a little bit. So I tucked it right behind its shoulder, and I thought he was quartering a little bit. He was quartering a little harder. So there I went right behind his shoulder through both lungs and into his guts. And the guts stopped the arrow, but it poked a hole out the opposite side. So he was bleeding out of both sides when he hit that field. So, I mean, it just took everything out. So I was really impressed with, one, how my arrow worked and my broadhead setup and that new carbon one. That was the first deer with the Bowtech carbon one, I think, from our crew. We got those bows this year. You know, this is my first year shooting a Bowtech exclusively. And I was very, very satisfied with how everything handled, how the setup handled. I had to hold my draw a little bit longer. It just did really good and performed really well for the condition I was in.
So, Matt, I've got a couple immediate questions for you. One, the deer that came through that morning, are you convinced it was that deer?
No, because it came from a different direction.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it came from a different direction and went the way those deer were going to go if they'd got past me.
I got you. Okay. So my second question for you is, when you went in blind to this area, because I kind of did something similar-ish this past weekend. I went into an area that I had only walked through like for a matter of 10 minutes. And it kind of bit me in the butt because I picked out one tree and that tree had fallen over. So I kind of had to hunt on the ground and improvise. But when you picked that spot, was it just as simple as it was a pinch point that just stood out to you? What else went into that? Cause there had to be more to it.
Yeah. So there was like I said, it was a gradual slope coming off of a ridge. And two different stand types kind of met together right there. So we always talk about hunting, you know, transition areas and stuff like that when you're talking about different vegetation, different timber types, all that stuff. So that stuck out to me. And then the one was the browse I found. And then there was a very, very heavy trail that was about 10 yards from that wood line. And I was like, well, you know, these deer come from this way, which it wasn't even the trail that the deer came from. So that really set it out. But what it, realistically, what it was that slope right there. It was an easy way for those deer to travel to and from and still be protected. It wasn't too much of a strain on their body to, you know, get up, get down through a creek and back up a creek. It was more gradual. And it opened up. A lot of times I don't like hunting very open stuff. I think my furthest shot was about 40 yards, but it was just down one lane. So, but basically, well, the answer to that question, it was just a pinch, man. And you just had to know, you know, when I say a pinch, it's like a 200-yard pinch. You know, you just got to know where to set in that 200 right. yards. And that
right.
and that brow, the brows narrowed that down for me because the further I went, there wasn't really anything for them to eat unless there was like a persimmon tree or something in there. So I just set up, you know, where I thought, you know, one, hey, if this is an observation set, I may be able to see where they cross on this pinch. But all in all, what these bucks were doing was they were trying to get back to their bed. And I mentioned that he stopped before he turned. He stopped because he was about to walk into an opening and he didn't want to, he wanted to see if there was any danger there. Well, I was thinking 26 foot, you know, up in that, up in a tree, hoping that my wind, the way my wind was blowing would not blow where they were coming from, which he ended up coming from a direction I wasn't really expecting him to come from. But I was telling you about the trails. Like when I got down, I really observed the area to see like, okay, where can I duplicate this again? Why did this buck do this? That beat down trail that I saw, he mm-hmm. was not on one of those. He was just on a random buck trail. And that's what I think like a lot of the guys that were hunting this place, they were seeing these beat down trails and setting up on these beat down trails. I don't think the bucks are using that. I think they may be using it later in the season when they're cruising, but right now they're just kind of walking randomly through these areas that they feel protected.
Is there such a thing as a traveler? Not a Delta, because we know on one flight, Mike in 8C prefers reality TV to reality. So we provide more than 1,000 hours of in-flight entertainment. While on the flight after, 8C is occupied by Jen, whose favorite snack is tea. That's why we provide fast, free Delta Sync Wi-Fi available for SkyMiles members. Because at Delta, we know. Refill? Everyone flies their own way. Delta, keep climbing. Free Wi-Fi available on most domestic flights. Terms of use apply.
Anytime Fitness is for real people with real fitness goals. I mean, let's be honest. Most of us aren't training for marathons or half marathons or even half marathons. Only time most of us are running at all is if we're trying to make a connecting flight. Wouldn't have been late if we didn't stop to buy a headphone dongle. Point is, you gotta be ready. You do not want to deal with rebooking. Anytime Fitness, where real people help you make real progress. Join today and get a plan for training, nutrition, and recovery.
Why did you feel like you were adjacent to bedding? Like, first, like my biggest question is, there are pinch points for me. I treat a lot of areas in Georgia as like CRP. Mentally, it's like they could be anywhere. It's an entire swath of bedding cover, right? It's just a huge block of timber. And then you'll have these like natural pinches between them. What about that area told you you would be able to catch him going to bed? Was it just simply that there was a pinch in bedding that just told you this was a high opportunity situation? Or was there something else that led you to think that particular pinch was close enough to bedding to catch him?
Yeah. So I was probably 250 yards from where I'd seen him the night before.
Gotcha.
And I knew like that I had a chance because the way I got in there, there was multiple ways for him to feel protected while heading to bed. Mm-hmm. So if he had to walk through an opening, he was probably going to walk through that opening right at gray light or in the dark. And he would use those patches of woods as his cover to where he wouldn't be caught out in the open.
I got you. That makes a lot of sense. So you knew that it was proximity to where I got you. Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of drew a line like with my mapping, and we had a very good conversation about mapping today in Polo. Like I was using every feature that I had to like, okay, what would be the quickest area for him to get like an escape route from people coming in? Like what's the quickest way for him to like ditch that pressure? And right there where I was that area.
Gotcha.
Did you think about, did you look at it as in what's the closest bedding, or are you looking for like the best bedding?
I was looking for the best bedding. There was areas where he could have bedded closer, and that's where I wanted to be for that evening hunt. because I thought – so where he was coming out in the afternoon from – you know, I didn't see him come out that afternoon. I just saw him in the field. And so I assumed that he was in the stuff behind him. But I didn't know if he was doing – like, a lot of times in these early season hunts, they'll be very wind-based bedding. And I found that out in October at this place. And so I was wondering if he was, you know, going to one bed first thing in the morning, then he moved to another bed, then he moved back to another bed, then being his final bed to then set up very nicely to move into that feeding pattern for the afternoon. So where I was, there was multiple opportunities for him to bed. So like when I told you I walked too far from where I was hunting, it got really thick in there. And like he could, it was thick enough to where you couldn't see into it, but he could see out of it and he would feel safe there. So he could have bedded there or gone past me and gone to where I believe he was headed to.
Makes sense.
So, I
want to ask a question though, real quick. You said wind-based bedding. What told you in the past that this was wind-based bedding? Because it feels like in some places that they tend to be more wind-based, and other places it seems like people identify other reasons. Like I know of one WMA, wind be damned, there are a couple places that there's water, and that's where those deer want to be. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because it swirls. I think it's just because they can put their back to something. What you said you saw it there previously in October. What did you witness?
Yeah, so I hunted there. First part of October last year. And we actually have a video of it. It's called the Buck Fest video. It's on our channel. Y'all can go watch it if you want to. I actually end up killing a doe in that video. But I found a spot that was really hot on feed trees and went in there, found it at like 12 o'clock, went in there at 3 o'clock, got set up, had a buck under me at 4 o'clock, then had five more shooter bucks come in. And they were all moving off of a north wind. I used it as a crosswind for me for how I set up. I sat down below them and they went above me with that north wind in their face. Everything worked out perfect, except they were at 70 yards through the woods. Wasn't going to shoot them. So I said, okay, surely they didn't get spooked. I said, surely they'll do this again the next morning or the next afternoon. So I get in there. Parker went in there with me, but he came in from a different direction. Well, while I was getting set up, I mean, I haven't even pulled my bow off the tree. A big old buck, he bumped a buck out of its bed from the opposite side. So the wind switched from a north wind to a south wind. And he came from the north the second morning where the bucks, he came from the north that evening where the bucks came from the south the evening prior. So they shifted their bedding. Whether it was all of them bedding in the same area or not, that buck was bedded north of me to then come in with a south wind to feed in those oaks.
Interesting.
So, you know, and I put that together as I go. I mean, I didn't, you know, when I was making my decision to hunt in there, it wasn't like, hey, if he has this wind, I'm going to do this or that. I mean, I just knew he was in there and I needed to capitalize on it at that time. Now, you know, whether he changed on that or not, I can't tell you 100%, but I feel like that had some play with it.
Do you think if you hadn't had the previous October's experience with that area, you would have made the same call?
I think so, because I hadn't had an encounter with him. I know those bucks can, you know, anywhere you are, the South, Midwest, those first few days is when you catch them off their feet. Like they haven't been conditioned to where they have to really start thinking hard. Of where they're going to bed, how they're going to move. So, you know, really those first two hunts are really your best bet to catch them on that regular pattern because that pattern usually changes.
Mm-hmm. Brett, what you got? I see you thinking over there.
I'm just taking it all in, thinking.
I think one of the things I keep hearing in this as a repeatable thing is that there is value in going to the same place different parts of the year. And seeing how it impacts it, because there's areas that I'm scouting right now that Matt, you've been helping me break apart. Because I make no qualms about it. I make as much use of this group as the patrons do. Right? I'm not a very good. I'm not a good deer hunter. I've said it 100 times.
I sent y'all my pin the night before. And I was like, hey, you know, I think I'm going to go into this area. You know, I got all good responses from y'all because, you know, you look at it on map, it's like, okay, that makes sense. But a lot of people aren't going to see that. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are just going to be like, oh, no, that's, you know, no, that's not going to be it. And, you know, that's kind of was kind of my whole week. I mean, it was me, three other guys, and some guys from Tethered. And, you know, from my scouting intel, all the guys that were in my group, we were on bucks. We all got shots at bucks, you know. So mm-hmm. being able to get in there, one, do the summer scouting. I know it sucks. You get seed ticks, you get ticks, chiggers, all that. You know, I got scabs all over me right now. I look like I'm on some hard drugs or something. But it pays off, you know. Would you get 1,000 chigger bites to kill a drop down velvet buck? Yeah, 100%.
I get 1,000 chigger bites to shoot a yearling. What are you talking about, man?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's just one of those things. And a lot of people don't want to put in the work. And where I was going was not appealing to the eye.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't want to talk too much on that, but that's just kind of, I drove around the second or the first afternoon. I got done with a buck. I actually cleaned him, caped him out. I was able to use my jointer die knife. That was the first deer I was able to clean with it. It did outstanding. We appreciate their support for the podcast, for the show. So if y'all haven't, you know, go check out Jointer Die, see what they offer. They have a lot of different knives. I think each one of us has a different one of their knives, and we all thoroughly enjoy it. So I'm ready to use mine on another deer whenever that happens, you know. But clean him up, and I went out that afternoon. I said, well, I'm just going to drive around, you know, try to help the guys at camp, you know, find a deer. If I could see a deer in the field and try to replicate what I did. Well, what I found was the spots that I had cameras in or that I had scouted, there was like maybe a car at the parking lot. You know, all these other areas had like 7 to 8 trucks at the parking lot. So I was doing something a lot different than everybody else. But and what sucked is when somebody would be like, well, what are you doing? I didn't want to talk, you know, I didn't want to say too much, because then it just, you know how it goes, it kind of gets blown out of proportion. And I've had that happen to me one too many times, where because I'm proud of what I find, like I want to tell people, like, hey, look, you know, hey, look at this, look what I found. But at the end, like, I worked my butt off for that. Like, That's kind of my holy grail. You know, I'm going to hold on to that. So if y'all think people are being selfish or, you know, whatnot, no, they're not. They just work their butt off, and they don't want to give you a pen to go in and kill something they worked hard for. But I have a select group of people that I'll do that. And y'all are some of them, and some of my buddies are some of them as well. So that's kind of what we did. And, you know, out of the three guys, you know, two of them had opportunities to kill, one of them killed. And it was a hunt that I'll always remember. That's for sure.
Well, real quick, you mentioned Jointer Die Knives. We talked about this the first time we tried to record this podcast, but we're doing a giveaway with them. So I don't know the exact details of when and what knife we're giving away, but we're probably going to launch that pretty soon. It's a seasonal promotion for deer season. So if you guys want to use the promo code SOCOHUNT with Join or Die to get 10% off your order. But if you're a patron, get ready. You're about to have your name thrown into a hat for, I think, one of the baddest knives on the market. So, Matthew, I appreciate that natural segue that you just, you know.
It's easy to be natural when you're actually using the product, you know. And that's what we love about all of our sponsors. You've heard us mention Bowtech in here. We've got Join or Die. We got Tethered, who, shoot, we use the crap out of their stuff. All my stuff I had this week was Tethered based, whether it be the Fast Pack, Phantom, One Sticks, you know, all the good stuff. And it really, really helps when you have the right gear to make things happen. No doubt.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. Whenever you're using it, and you have the confidence of it, I mean, it makes the plug real easy. But we want to say thank you to all those folks. We want to say thank you again to the patrons. Matt, if you have one singular, I used to do this on every Chasing Tails episode. I'm going to conclude it. You're the guest of tonight's honor. If you have one singular piece of advice that you want people to take away from this hunt in particular, what is it? Todd, get your notebook out.
I'd probably say time, because that's really all this hunt is attested to, is my time in the woods, whether it be me working in the woods as a timber buyer, seeing things on a day-to-day basis to see how these deer shift, seeing different sign, knowing what to look at, whether it be that browse. You know, if I wouldn't have seen that browse, I may have backed out of there and said, I'm not going to hunt this area. But I put time in last year, put time in Alabama, put time in scouting. I mean, one day we did, we walked 14 miles one day, you know, just scouting. That may not be a lot to some folks, but that was a lot for me on a weekend trip. And yeah, so time is the number one asset really to hone your skills.
I love it. That is the core tenet of every mm-hmm. consistent killer, whether it's Dave Owens for turkey, whether it's Brett Smashburn for deer, it does not matter. It seems like the universal denominator for most good killers yeah. is the fact that they have that time invested. It's the most scarce resource. I'm sorry, you can buy all kinds of advantages, but the Whitetail Experience talks about sometimes buying that extra day of PTO. He'll work overtime so he can get that extra day of PTO, so he can just have one more opportunity or two more opportunities in the woods. And the more time goes on, I am looking forward to finding some groove with the podcast where I can have a little more time, because I'd love to tag along with you guys more. I really would.
It's it's fun. It's nice to be able to be flexible to scout. And I think we did an episode with you, Brett, on Southern Ground last year. And we got to talking to you about the time you spend in the woods, and you keep a log of how many hours you spend scouting versus hunting. And it was very impressive to me to see, you know, how much time you spend scouting. A lot of people will look at summer scouting and be like, oh, it's a waste of time because the deer are going to shift. Well, you're scouting for that shift. You're putting all your stuff and checking those areas you want to be in before the season, so that you're not in there mucking it up when they're actually in there. You know the exact time to get in there. So, Brett, you're a good testament to time in the woods, because it pays off. And you're gonna have a limited time this year. You've got, you know, your boy that's about to be born. So you've keyed in these spots over the years that hopefully you know the week you need to be in there and you can capitalize on it.
Yeah, I feel like I do. Going along with that, you know, like you said, I try to put that time in right after for more of your pre-rut, late season stuff, and use our summertime scouting just to find some hot food sources for early season. And that way I've stayed out of all those, what I would call hot spots or your best spots until the time's actually yeah. right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it pays dividends.
Also, yeah, for sure. You were talking about lists. So I was just looking back at my notes, and as a Patreon Discord, you know, our Patreon Discord group, we have a total of 8 big game kills, like killed and recovered.
That's awesome.
Already this year?
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, man.
And two of them were gators.
I was about to say, that's a little bit different. Big game means gators too, and it's gator season. Yeah. So we got some true Florida crackers out there doing hell. But, you know, I think I want to just say one thing, and this is for like the new guys out there, the guys that find themselves in a rut. Matt, you know, you said Brett's out there scouting, and a lot of people say you shouldn't be out there scouting because they're going to shift. Dude, I'm going to tell you right now, just scout when you have the opportunity, whether it's summer or not. What you're looking for might change. It doesn't matter when. If it's a month after the season, the middle of July, the middle of December, if you feel like you got the opportunity to go out there and learn something about that area, take advantage of it, because you're going to come away with something. It might be a fainter trail. It might not stand out to you quite as well, but you knew they were using it to come deer season. They'll probably use it again. It might be acorn caps underneath the tree. You know that white oak had a bumper crop this year. Good chance it might not next year, but it's a producing oak tree, so drop a pin on it and come back and check on it, right? You know, like, there's just little things that you stack over time, and maybe you get to scout postseason one year and preseason the next year or in season the year after that. You're just going to stack institutional information there. I mean, I, the self-proclaimed okayest hunter of this group, you know, I went this past weekend and put 4 or 5 years worth of intel together and found a pattern in a bottom, put a camera up and immediately got deer pictures, right? I mean, that's just because of all the time I've spent in that bottom. And encouragement from Brett and Parker being like, dude, this spot is worth the time and the investment. So a lot of people get really hung up on, well, I can't hunt, I can't scout right now, so I'll just wait. Well, just go. Take you a camel pack and get out there.
Yeah. You're going to be hot either way. You're a hard worker in the woods. Better go do
That's right. That's right. Now, I get your honeydew list done because you really want to be deer hunting, but still, you know, get out there. So unless you guys have any parting wisdom, let's put a pin in this.
I think I'm good. I appreciate y'all letting me share the story again. And man, it was a hunt of a lifetime. And hopefully I can kill a couple more deer this year.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope you do too. Although if you don't the rest of the year, I won't feel sorry for you. if you haven't already, go do Matt some love and check out his Kentucky video. As of right now, he's knocking on the door of 10,000 views, which is like the biggest joy for me, is to see that so many people are enjoying what we're putting out there, what Matt in this instance put out there for you guys to watch. I think we've got some of the finest Southern content you're going to find out there right now. And we got a bunch of it. We got a video dropping. When's that video going to drop? Is it tomorrow when they're hearing this?
Yeah, it'll drop tomorrow.
There you go. So every week on Tuesdays, you got content coming on the main podcast feed. On Thursdays, you're going to get a live from the fire update. Only one. So if all four of us have an update, three of those are going to go exclusively to Patreon members, but one of them will go to the main feed on Thursdays. And then at some point every week, you're going to be getting a deer video. So I told y'all we had a bunch of stuff coming. I didn't know about some of it, but like, dude, we're cranking it out for you guys. I hope you guys are looking forward to the fall as much as I am. So until next time, y'all get outside and enjoy the great outdoors.
Don't miss Mondays with Into the Blue, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Every Monday night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment. On Mondays, head offshore with Captain Scott Walker and Steve Roger for breathtaking deep-sea adventures.
Coming to me.
Double. He's jumping.
Oh!
Look at that belly.
Don't miss Mondays with Into the Blue, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern.
Tell a few fish stories along the way.
On Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.